A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Okay, everybody, this is Alex Barnett. I'm joined by Matt Ritter. And Matt, joining us from a remote location. We're here for episode 61 of the Comedians at Law podcast. We're very excited. This is our pre-Thanksgiving episode. Coming to you just a few short days before Thanksgiving. We got some really great news stories. But before we get that, I think, Matt, we do want to give a shout-out to the folks at our recent White Plains Performing Arts Center show, which you hosted.
You know what? Those people came out in mass.
Yeah, they really did.
Big turnout.
A couple of hundred people. Matt hosted. The show was fabulous from beginning to end. And we want to give a big shout out to the White Plains Performing Arts Center, to Rick Cerulli, to Adam Oliensis, who helped broker the deal, and to our fellow comedians at law, Joan Weisblatt, Kevin Israel, and Julie Katakis, who all did a fantastic job.
I'm just proud of the people of White Plains. I would say the average age was around 50 or 60, and they were out there late at night in White Plains through the snow to see us. So I really appreciate that.
That's a good point, Matt. That's right. There was a snowstorm, and we wound up actually having a great turnout. And then people stayed out late afterwards to hang out with us and enjoy some food and some drink. And we really got to know some people very well. So that was great.
Yeah, but New York is too cold for me now, I decided.
Oh, that's right. Well, for those of you who don't know, Matt Ritter is our resident Los Angelino, and along with John Evie Goldstein and Anna Bloom, and he has very thin blood these days.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a native New Yorker, but once you go to L.A. and you start wearing a bathing suit every day, it changes
Speedo,
you.
Right.
Once you start wearing a Speedo all day and for business meetings and everything, it really changes you. It really changes your body chemistry.
Yeah, right, along with a few other things. But anyway, we had a great time. So thank you again to the White Plains community and the White Plains legal community for coming out en masse, and to the people at the White Plains Performing Arts Center. And we're looking forward to a couple of gigs we got coming up on the horizon. Matt, which you're going to be doing and running on your own with Kevin and some on your own.
Oh, yeah. Well, January, we got a pretty full calendar. I mean, we're going to be in Nashville for Vandy Law School. Then we're going to be in Arizona with Matt Storrs. And maybe John Avi or Adam, we'll see. We'll be in Scottsdale on the 29th of January, and the 30th we'll be at Stand Up Live in Phoenix.
That's fantastic. So we're being contacted locally in New York by some people about doing some events for them in the holiday season, and some people down in the Southeast. So, folks, if you're listening to this and you want to get us, book us for your holiday parties or for your post-holiday parties, you should reach out to us very quickly because our calendar's filling up.
Yeah, I'll do it for nothing. I'll do it for a few thousand dollars.
Right. As long as he gets to wear his Speedo, Matt will be wherever you need him to be.
Yes. So it's got to be somewhere warm for me.
Well, Matt, listen, we want to keep this episode tight because people have their holiday plans to make for this coming Thursday, Thanksgiving. So let's get right into the news, shall we?
Let's jump in.
But since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
Okay, so the first story this week is one that I think is near and dear to your heart as a dog owner. This is about a recent trend in New York where people are using their dogs to go hunting for rats in the city streets of New York City. And you're a dog owner. What do you think of this?
You know, I found it fascinating. First of all, I have a 13.5-pound French bulldog, which is about a New York-sized city rat.
That's right.
So I don't see how my dog would really get off. I don't see her performing that well at rat hunting. I mean, she'd basically be wrestling to the death with this rat.
I think that's right. But I think at the same time, this might be a new avocation or vocation for you. Because, first of all, the guys get to wear the outfits like they're on an English fox hunt.
Oh, it's cool. It's very cool. But it sounded cool at first. I was like, oh, where do they hunt them? And then they're like, oh, we just throw our dogs into a dumpster.
That's right.
Like, what is that?
Right.
That's now, not a rat hunt. I mean, that's dumpster diving.
Right. Now, for those people who listen to the podcast who aren't from New York City, just so you know, New York City is not like what you see in the movies with like, or from the movies of the 80s where it's just like filth everywhere. New York City is actually a relatively clean, cosmopolitan area. That said, there are areas of the town that are filled with garbage and infested with rats. So you can imagine that chasing your terrier, Jack Russell Terrier, your French bulldog down an alley might not be the thing you want to do.
So, you know, the city ordinances, they're not violating any city ordinances right now.
No, they're not violating any city ordinances, but obviously it's raising some eyebrows with the animal protection people who are saying it's cruel to the rats, it's cruel to the dogs, because if a dog gets bitten by a rat that's ingested poison, the dog can get poisoned.
Well, let me just cut you off right there. You know, I am an animal lover, but at some point you have to draw the line. You got to go, look, we're not protecting rats, okay? That's where I draw the line. We're not protecting the rats. The rats do not deserve our protection. They carry bubonic plague. I don't know what they do. I'm sure they do some good things, but they're not getting animal rights protection. But the idea of my dog, just I kiss my dog on the mouth. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that's exactly. Do you want to kiss your dog on the mouth after it's kissed or eaten a rat or bitten a rat?
I prefer not to. I mean, I already get some junk on my mouth from the dog because she's very close to the ground. She's already, already licking all kinds of disgusting things. I probably shouldn't be kissing her on the mouth, but I don't relish the idea of kissing her after she's chopped a rat's head off in her mouth.
Right. Now, well, okay, so number one, why are you kissing your dog? Just out of affection? You love your dog that much?
Yeah, are you not are you not a dog guy? I mean, everybody who really loves their dog kisses their dog on the mouth, I think.
I love dogs. I grew up with dogs. I don't have one currently. I have a child that, fills in that hole in my life.
Yeah.
But no, I love dogs. I've obviously had dogs kiss me on the face. That's fine. But I just wanted to check because maybe I thought it was like a Hollywood thing where people have to kiss their dogs for some sort of status in society.
I let my dog lick my entire face.
All right. Well, here's the other thing. So you are a dog owner. You're a dog lover. Do you sense that this is a kind of thing that will make its way to L.A. and you'll be in the forefront of that movement of rat hunting?
Yeah. Well, L.A., you don't really see that many rats, actually, relative to New York. I don't think I've actually ever seen a rat in L.A. But if it did, I could see it catching on, I mean, it sounds like something – it's like a fun group activity, a little – meet up. Who wants to do a meet up? Rat hunt. 4 o'clock. Rat hunt.
That, I tell you what.
I can see celebrities getting really into it.
I think actually you just started a new thing. The meet up for rat hunting.
Yeah, I could see celebrity. I could see somebody like taking up like how Ed Norton is behind the Skyline.
Right.
I could see like Vin Diesel being like the preeminent rat hunter.
I like it. I think this is a great idea, and I think you're going to be the guy who's going to be credited with starting the rat hunting meetup.
Yeah, rat hunting meetups. Yeah. I think it should be. Look, I don't have a problem with it because rats are kind of a scourge. It's sort of like deer hunting, in populations where the deers are causing problems and are overpopulated. I mean, I'm not a big fan of it. I sort of see why it's legal. And sort of in the same vein, I could see why this would be legal.
Yes, I think. Well, I think we'll continue to monitor the situation. I'm not too troubled by it. I mean, obviously, I would be more worried for the dogs than for the rats, frankly.
Yeah.
Who knows? In any event, let's move to our second story.
So I think we all recall there was a big scandal at Duke a few years back. Duke lacrosse team had a big party, invited a stripper over, and one thing led to another. Became a big he said, she said thing. They said they had her over and she danced and no lines were crossed. She claimed that they raped her, that a group of young college players raped her, and it became a racially charged issue because she was a black woman and they were privileged white kids, down in the South, in North Carolina. It's sort of a somewhat segregated area still to this day. There's a lot of, cultural divide, economic injustice down there. So it became a hot button issue. And, it ruined these kids' lives for a time, I think. I think they ended up not being found guilty. And then, I think that the prosecutor ended up getting fired down there. And
I think he was actually disbarred.
He was disbarred. So he was doing some shady stuff. I think we all remember it was sort of the story of the day for a good 6 month period, you know, in our country. It kind of took hold of us. Well, 5 years later, I guess it's 5 years now. We just found out that the accuser, Crystal Mangum, was found guilty of second degree murder for murdering her boyfriend.
Right.
You know,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
I was going to say, not to say that this somehow exonerates these guys. But, you know, you always sort of have to be a suspect of people with shady backgrounds making accusations, I find.
Yeah, and I guess the reports about this story indicate that she's got a history of shady or criminal activity throughout her life. Now, not that she's perpetrating. She was the victim, apparently, of quite a few crimes from early ages. But it appears that... this is just yet another chapter in this woman's tragic life story.
Pretty sad stuff. But it's just like, you know, it just goes, you know, it goes back to that issue of like, I find that, you know, it's weird that in the same week, you know, we sort of have now had a, kind of confirmation of our feelings about the Trayvon, George Zimmerman outcome, you know?
Oh, that Zimmerman turns out to be a really slimy dude.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And you know, I think it's like, you know, when your instincts tell you something about somebody's character or background, maybe we should listen to them.
Right, right. Well, I think that's an interesting analogy to draw. Here, right, she was this woman who turned out made false allegations of rape, and now, fast forward, looks like 6-7 years, and she's now killed somebody.
Yeah. You know, not to say that, you know, you should ever take charges lightly or you know, and that's not at all what I'm saying is I'm just saying, if, you know, when viewed in the totality, looking back, you know, with our 2020 hindsight, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that now that George Zimmerman probably, you know, was a pretty bad dude.
Yeah. Well, I think by all accounts, Zimmerman is not a guy who's losing any friends these days.
who's winning any friends, you mean?
No, I don't think. I think he has zero friends. It's like at this point,
he has zero to lose. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. It is interesting.
But it also made me wonder. You know, it also made me wonder. Then, you know, about these Duke lacrosse kids, because they really took it on.
Yeah, it ended.
It was really hard
careers
for these guys, you know, and they were young teenagers, you know.
Right. It ended.
Yeah.
It ended.
You know,
their careers.
But these are the kind of things that stay with you for a very long time, not just your career.
Right. Well, it ended their athletic careers. It ended their college careers. I mean, if you're gonna have your college career go into the dumper, it should be for reasons of your own doing, like for you and me. You know, the way I dragged my way through college and ruined my academic standing. And I know some of the other members of our group did that, which is why we're all now comedian lawyers, not lawyers.
Yeah, we earned it. We earned it.
Right. We earned our bad college grades the old-fashioned way. We drank our way through college.
Yeah. I also think, you know, if your name's Crystal Mangum, you're just – I don't know. It seems like you're probably set up for failure from birth.
Well, I don't want to make light of the woman's story or family, but, you know, the name is suggestive of – perhaps it almost sounds like a stage name.
It does sound like a bit like a stage name. But anyway, a tragic story, you know. But it just sort of made me think of that with all, you know, with all this stuff with Zimmerman going on. It just made me think, like, if only we got to look back 5 years on every, you know, on every case to see, you know, who these people really are.
Right. Well, let's move forward, because this is actually the Thanksgiving podcast episode. And we really wanted to talk about Thanksgiving and the ins and outs of office etiquette and the legality of Thanksgiving. So for those of you who are not American, who are not listening to this in America, who don't know, this coming Thursday is the United States celebration of Thanksgiving, where we give thanks for all the frozen turkey we have in this country.
I thought it was giving thanks to all the land we stole from the Native Americans.
And all the land we stole from the Native Americans. That's correct. And also low regulations on hedge fund managers. But in any event...
Yeah, what do you think is a... By the way, incidentally, what do you think is a better deal, the $24 for Manhattan or the government bailout of the banks?
I think that's almost like a Twitter question we should put out to our audience.
We should, but what is the current value of Manhattan? You know, they got it for $24 versus the $700 billion bailout that was tax-free. What is the who got a better deal?
Right. Who got a better deal, the Dutch or Goldman Sachs?
Yeah.
But in any event, you raised a really interesting point, I thought, offline, which we should put out there to our listening audience, which was the following. And take it away. About Thanksgiving and holidays and taking time off.
You know, I always find this is the time of year where people start mailing it in at work. And it usually starts happening at some point in this week. Is it, you know, some people just say, hey, screw it. I'm going to take a 2-week vacation the week of Thanksgiving because it falls on a Thursday. Nobody comes in on Friday.
That's right. That's right.
Some people go, oh, you know what? I'm going to work the first 2 days. And then my office has half day on Wednesday, and then I'm not going to come in Friday, right? Other people work the full day Wednesday and come in on Friday because they're like, I take my job seriously. Thanksgiving's for weaklings.
Right.
I think the proper etiquette is to mail it in on Wednesday completely. But show up. But mail it in and leave by noon.
Okay. On Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
Okay. And then what do you come in on Friday?
I mean, obviously, I'm a disgrace of a corporate lawyer. I think you can't come in on Friday because, you know, you're on the toilet all day.
But no, but what's okay, but people don't need to know that. What's the rationale you give to your office colleagues for why you're not in on Friday?
You have tryptonosis.
Like tryptophan poisoning. You're still asleep.
Yeah. You've overdosed on tryptophan, and you know you're going through withdrawal. You got the shakes.
Right. See, what I used to do. I think just as a caveat for our listeners, you should know that that Matt and I phoned it in from the minute we wake up, and have been phoning it in for years.
Yeah, but we're trying to give good advice here.
Right, but to the people, when I used to be serious about my legal career, I would always work Wednesday till the last moment. Travel on Thursday because the traffic was already gone. And then I would work on Friday, but from a remote location.
Ah, so you were at wherever the holidays were, but you would log in and do some work on Friday.
Right, which killed two birds with one stone. Because first of all, after a whole day with your family, you don't really want to spend another whole day with your family uninterrupted. So you
No, I agree with that. But your whole family isn't usually, unless you're traveling, usually your whole family isn't around. On Friday, you just are just phoning in. It's like a sick day. It's like a free sick day.
It is. But that way, if you're still in a family location, you can say, oh, I have to work. And that gets you out of the family meal.
You know, it's funny you say that. I feel like that's what my brother does. It's like he doesn't want to spend that much time with us. So he does a little work.
Right. And then the other part is all the other people who don't come to the office on Friday and don't bill time. You look better than they do because you've billed, you know, say 4 hours or 5 hours.
Yeah, no, you look good. I think you look good on Friday. I think Wednesday, it doesn't really help you to be the guy who's staying there late because all the other people are gone. They won't even know.
That's right. That's right. I think Wednesday's a gimme. Wednesday, everyone assumes no one's going to do work.
Even Friday, whose brownie points are you getting? There's no partners who are going to be sitting there.
No, I think that's
Friday.
Right. It's just at the end of the year. You know, if you lose Wednesday and Friday from the week of billables, you're losing a lot of time.
Agreed. And, you know, those are easy billable days, right? Because nobody's around bothering you.
Right. And no one's really worried that you're not getting something done because everyone knows the courts are closed. No one's taking it seriously. Everyone's already downshifted into the holiday season.
Yeah. Let's talk about the actual etiquette of Thanksgiving. Like, do you have to eat everything? Do you have to try everything that's out there?
Well, let me start with that because I was a vegan for many years and a vegetarian for many other, more years, and my feeling.
Wait, which one's more pompous, vegan or vegetarian?
Well, most vegans are fairly pompous. I was not a pompous vegan. I was a vegan for health and nutritional reasons. I always felt like people should eat whatever the hell they want. I never got up on a soapbox. It always made people feel defensive to have me around, so they would always explain why they only ate red meat, you know, every other
day.
Yeah,
I know. I'm always like, I like red meat because I'm a savage.
But I found that being a vegan was great on Thanksgiving because I could just say, well, I don't eat that. And so I never had to worry about offending someone, at least directly, because if I said I don't want the turkey, it wasn't because the turkey tasted
bad. It's a good way for you to getting out of eating Aunt Meg's side dishes that are horrible.
Exactly. Because I could just say, look, I just want some bread and some salad. I'm good. And as long as I didn't get anyone's face about it, it was great. Now that I am a more omnivorous person, And I think when if you're an omnivorous, if people know you eat meat, you have to try everything.
You do.
I think you do. I think you have to at least put a little bit of something on your plate, as if you're three and your parents are telling you you have to eat everything.
You know, why do grown-ups, I mean, you know, it's weird. Grown-ups, we're so petty. I feel like people get really petty about their – no, I don't know. I just came to this realization. Like, you know, I don't know. Some of the members of my family, like, I feel like they're monitoring who tried their dish. They need the validation.
I think that's right. I think they are. I think this is the big day. This and well, Christmas, if you're Christian, when people get to show off their cooking flair. And whether they're good or bad, you got to try some of their food to make them feel good. Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to try like seven of my mom's dishes and pretend that I like them. I have to eat like mass quantities of them. The plate needs to be cleared.
Yeah, see, that's rough. That's rough.
She's keeping a watchful eye.
Now, on the flip side, I have a two-year-old who doesn't eat a lot of stuff. I mean, he really only eats like basically starch. And he also has no attention span. So, you know, dinner for us is never relaxing because he's always trying to get up and run around the room or, you know, wants to leave wherever the hell we went. So that's my out now this year is I don't have to eat because I'm busy watching my son.
What about the football out? Can you just disappear into the other room and watch football all day? What is your take on that?
I think the football out really hinges upon, is there a patriarchal figure or elder statesman who will set the trend?
Dad is the type of guy who will just take all the food and then just leave the table and go to the other room.
And I think that's great because if he does that, you have permission to follow suit.
But people frown upon his behavior most of the time.
They do, but as long as someone over 50 who's male does that first, every other male in the room can do it.
Good. Well, then I guess I'm happy to have my dad around because he's a permanent source of patriarchal, old school, whatever, bad manners.
I think as long as you have your dad around, you're fine.
Yeah, so. But he's asleep like 5 minutes later, so then it's kind of like. Then, I don't know, I feel like you don't really get away with it as much if he's asleep.
Oh, the women are using the old man's asleep nap exception.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like you're not allowed to just be sitting there if he's asleep. He has to stay awake.
It's like in a Clockwork Orange, you got his eyes propped open with toothpicks.
I have to prop my dad's eyeballs open so that I can get away with watching the TV because I'm really watching by myself.
Okay. Well, I think... Yeah, I mean, you might have to. But Nathan, I think though that's my take on the etiquette of Thanksgiving.
So where do we come out on this? Wednesdays, you should just show up on Wednesday, but mail it in. I say leave before noon. Alex says spend the whole day there Wednesday.
Right.
He thinks Friday's a good day to bill. I'll say you just call in with overeating diarrhea.
And there's our divide. So if you have a feeling about this and you want to tweet to us, please do it at Comedians at Law. And now we're going to
We want to know what all the lawyers' work schedule is this week. I'm curious if anybody just says screw it and doesn't show up at all this week.
Yeah, that's brave. They have to have courage to do that. You have to know that your neck's not on the chopping block this year to do that.
Yeah, you got to be pretty safe, huh?
Right. Well, look, let's move to our interview this week. I had the pleasure of interviewing our own Adam Bloom, one of the newer members of the group. So let's turn
I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah, it's a good interview. So let me turn to that interview right now. All right, Comedians at Law fans, I'm here today with Adam Bloom, who is a lawyer turned comedian, who's actually one of the newer members of Comedians at Law. Welcome, Adam, to the podcast.
Thanks, Alex. Good to see you, hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. We wanted to interview Adam because he's a very interesting guy. I was going to say interesting cat, but I think that's a little too hip for me. Adam, why don't you give us a little bit of bio about where you went to college and then where you went to law school?
All right. Well, it's starting with like the most pretentious credentials I can give you. But I went to undergrad at Cornell.
Okay. Very good.
And I did. I started off doing a bio. I was a bio major, and I don't think I wanted to go to med school, but I wanted to cure cancer.
Okay.
Started off modest. And then, just didn't pan out. And so I dropped that and switched into political science and decided I was going to be president.
How's that going for you?
And uh, Well, you know, I worked on, after I graduated, I worked on Dick Gephardt's presidential campaign, and we lost. And he placed fourth out of four in Iowa and retired from politics the next morning.
Right.
So, that's about as bad as you can lose.
So you went from bio major to biohazard? Yeah.
Yeah. And then I, after that, moved over to John Kerry's campaign and did that for about a year, and then he lost. So I pretty much decided that I wasn't going to work on another campaign unless my name was on the ballot. Uh-huh. And, I went to law school thinking that, I would do whatever it is you have to do to blah, blah, blah until I could be president.
Okay. Where'd you go to law school?
I went to, University of Arizona, because after Cornell, I was like, I'm going somewhere warmer, but I ended up at the sort of Cornell of hot. Like,
what does that mean?
Well, Ithaca was too cold and Arizona was too hot. Are we doing profanity on this? Is that...
No, you keep it clean. Keep it clean.
Okay.
I mean, you've already exposed yourself as being a biohazard who has got the kiss of death. You're like the cooler because everywhere you go, people lose.
Yeah.
So joining Comedians of Law may not have been... Inviting you to join Comedians of Law may not have been the best idea of ours. But anyway, so you're at Arizona.
Yeah,
you're too
right.
Damn hot. And now what happens to you?
I am the lead balloon that is going to bring down... the skyrocket of Comedians at Law.
Yeah.
I did a year in Arizona and then decided that, even if I wanted to take over Arizona, I could do that after law school. So I applied to transfer, and so I ended up at UCLA.
A very good law school. Now, let me stop you there real quickly, because Cornell obviously is a very fine institution, part of the Ivy League. Arizona, a fine institution, I'm sure very well regarded in the Southwest, but not nationally ranked, let's say, in law schools. What was the occasion to go from an Ivy League institution to a less than Ivy League institution?
Yeah, I mean, this is the beginning of a long list of excuses about why I didn't do better on my LSATs, basically. that's the short answer. Okay. I looked at the map and thought, wherever I go to law school, I'll probably end up living. So I want to go somewhere where I could possibly get involved in politics.
Okay.
And at the time, Arizona was, the Southwest was the fastest growing part of the country. Arizona was, turning blue. I mean, it's turning blue because it's filling up with Hispanics and I don't speak a word of Spanish.
Right. So you're really thinking there.
Even at Taco Bell, I have to just point at the menu. I can't, I have no Spanish at all.
Okay.
But I figured, what the hell? So I was down in Tucson, where I had done a rally for John Edwards in the 2004 campaign, and it had gone well. So I figured that was my foot in the door to do politics in Arizona. And people remembered that rally. That was gratifying. When I went back, people were like, "Oh yeah, I was at that thing. That was a great event, man."
Yeah. All right. So you moved on to UCLA, a very fine institution in Los Angeles, and did you finish there? Did you finish your law school career there?
Oh, I did. Okay. I did. I decided that two law schools was plenty.
Okay.
And, I did okay. I don't know. I missed the law review at University of Arizona as a 1L first year. And then I transferred and tried to get on the law review again and missed it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess law review just wasn't going to be my thing.
Well, we're going to start a law review within Comedians at Law, and you can edit that.
Thank you. I promise I will do a thoroughly mediocre job. The law review is, I don't know, if anybody's listening to this who's in law school, I can't recommend the law review. I know kids who did that and they said they liked it, but I don't know. It had a very culty sort of sad feeling where they make you write everything triple spaced in 60-point font or something. And then, you have to... They spend 3 months working on the footnotes, and I don't know. At the end of the day, I don't think those kids got any better jobs than anybody else.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they did. So anyway, so you finished at UCLA and took the bar, I assume.
Yeah, of course. I took the bar. I had the good fortune. I summered with a massive law firm that should remain nameless but was Jones Day. And
right.
Yeah. And I had an interesting summer. I split my summer between the LA and the New York office.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And That was cool. When I was in LA, I got in the habit of reading outside. Like when I started a new project, they would just give you a huge stack of cases or whatever it was, and you just had to read in order to familiarize yourself. So I would go sit outside the office and just read whatever I had to read. And I would forward my phone calls to my cell phone. And someone found out that I was doing this and didn't say anything at the time, but they waited. And then at my midsummer review, I got in a lot of trouble for reading outside.
Right.
Because that was not the Jones Day way, apparently. Because
I guess the outside air could affect the paper or something like that.
They were just like, we need you in your office. You need to be available, as if it was some sort of military situation. I mean, This was, you know, this was before the world ended when Summer Associates, it was literally like if you were breathing and you didn't vomit on any partner's shoes, they were just going to give you your money and make you an offer.
Right.
You know, so the idea that like you'd be on call anyway. So I had my run-ins with Jones Day, but I did end up, you know, getting an offer there in the New York office. And so I ended up with them in New York. And the nice thing is they pay for your bar. They pay for, you know, they give you a stipend for the summer. I did this revolutionary thing where I convinced them that I live too far from the study center. So they gave me the whole bar course on an iPod.
Oh, wow. So you stayed at Jones Day for how long?
I was there for 2.5 years. And I had two meetings with the head of my practice group. The first meeting was, you're a hard worker and you do good work. And the second meeting was 4 months later, and he said, you need to look for something else.
And what happened in 4 months?
I couldn't tell you. I was doing the same thing of sitting at my desk and wondering where I'd gone wrong with my life and, you know, looking for work and, I mean, talking to people on the phone.
Were you reading outside again?
You know, I had, I don't know, I can tell you, I had friends at Jones Day, because it was during the recession, so there was not a lot of work. But, like, I would get calls, and people would be, you know, at 1 o'clock on the afternoon, someone would say, hey, we're going to play basketball. Do you want to come play basketball? And I'd say, no, I don't think that's probably what we should be doing. You know, I don't want to get busted. And then, like, I got another call. We're going to see G.I. Joe. Do you want to come see G.I. Joe? And so this is like, you know, we were clocking like $160,000 a year, and that's what people were doing. But,
yeah,
you know, that's how it was in the recession. They were trying to maintain appearances, so there was no work. And, you know, we were all just sort of sitting around waiting for somebody to call us.
So when Jones Day invited you to leave, what happened next?
Well, conveniently, they waited to do it until just before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So at the time, nobody was hiring. So I'm like talking to recruiters and, you know, running around looking at job boards. And, you know, the scary thing is, I mean, I had some money saved up. I had saved a little bit because everybody knew, like when I was a first year at Jones Day and the recession started to get really bad, my roommate, who was also a Jones Day associate, came to me and he's like, look, you know, you're not getting any billable hours. You're going to get fired. And when you get fired, I still expect you to pay the rent. So you need to figure out what you're going to do.
Uh-huh.
So he been on top of me, like that was 2 years before it happened.
Okay.
You know, this friend of mine. So like we were all sort of, you know, aware that, I mean, the axe was always swinging over your head and they were slowly, quietly getting rid of people. And you couldn't tell. There was this frightening Kafka-esque thing that would happen when like somebody would send an email, this has been a great experience. I want to thank everybody who helped make this possible. I'm moving on to new opportunities in, you know, Hialeah, Florida. Thanks again. And you would go look them up, like, what year is this person? What practice group are they in? And they were already off the Jones Day website,
wow.
Flushed in the memory hole. So it was this weird sort of, I don't know, creepy thing where people were just vanishing. And all of a sudden, I was one of them. So, okay. You know, it's the recession and then it's the holidays. And so nobody is hiring. And the thing that you don't want is to have a gap in your resume. You can't have a gap in your resume because people assume that you just spent the whole time, you know, murdering hookers or something. I mean, they're just, you cannot have a gap in your resume.
Well, unless that's not your habit. I mean, some people play golf, I suppose. Other people, I guess, murder hookers. But
I guess.
Right.
If you're an unemployed 28-year-old, they assume you're playing golf.
Right.
Yeah, I eventually, you know, was looking around and came upon a temp job that was advertised as a civil rights position. And so I answered that ad, and it turned out to be a position with the New York City Law Department.
Okay.
Were you representing there? Police officers and corrections officers.
Right.
Which is, I guess, you were not in the same division, but you and I had at least the building in common. We
right.
were,
so you
know,
exactly
I used to run into
you
on the
you were defending. You were defending civil rights. You were defense counsel in civil rights cases where policemen had beat people up or falsely arrested them.
Well, allegedly.
Right,
allegedly.
Allegedly.
I mean,
good,
I still
good.
Have a little bit of blood. I'm not going to just give it to you.
Yeah, good.
You know, those cases, those were interesting cases. They, you know, sometimes the cops had beaten people up, and sometimes, you know, it was a drug dealer.
And sometimes the people deserved it.
For dealing drugs, yeah, and he got arrested, and he said, oh, it's not fair. And that every one of those complaints started the same. Every one of them started like, you know, so-and-so on this date and time was standing on the corner minding his own business when he was jumped by the police for no apparent reason at all.
Right.
And then you talk to the cops, and they would say, we watched him do a hand-to-hand transaction and sell someone drugs, and then we arrested him.
Right.
That's
all not right.
jumping him for no reason. So, you know, that was, I mean, that was that game. And
right.
sometimes the cops had roughed people up and sometimes they hadn't. But I will tell you, in retrospect, and this is the thing that, Alex, I don't know how you'll feel about this, but I have worked for, you know, a large law firm. I now work for a small law firm. I've worked for city government. I've worked for the state government of Arizona.
Right.
And the New York City Law Department is the best law office I have ever worked in.
Well, I don't know what that says about you or about the city, but I'm sure they'll be happy here if anybody's there is listening.
I'm telling you, it's shocking. But at the time, I was, you know, sitting in a cubicle and, you know, making temp salary and,
right.
you know, was what it was. But in retrospect, that office is killer.
Well,
they really
I'm sure they would welcome you back. But our time is drawing short, so I want to get to the meat of this thing, which is, I mean, all that biographical information was very interesting. And, of course, I will play it 20 years from now when you're running for president to make sure that you don't get elected. But
yeah, see if you can pull 30 seconds out of that I could cut into an ad. That would be-
But let's talk about your transformation into a comedian and a multifaceted one at that. When did you first get into comedy performing, and how'd that come about?
Comedy for me, I think, you know, I grew up, I think, like all of us, I just have these sort of flashes of watching Carlin on HBO when I was a kid and, you know, the Dave Chappelle Killing Them Softly special in 99. I had that entire 40 minutes memorized word for word. So I always loved comedy, and comedy was sort of the thing that I could do to make people want to hang out with me,
okay.
you know? Like, that was how I talked to girls. That was how I made friends. That was the reason that you would, you know, invite me out with everyone, was because I was funny.
Okay,
so that was the thing that I could do.
Yeah. So when did you, I guess, at least dabble in comedy?
When did I start doing it? Yeah. I mean, I made the choice. I had sort of. I always considered my two options to be comedy or politics, and I chose politics. And when politics flamed out, and you know, I did the campaigns, and then I went to law school, and then it all just sort of came to nothing. And I was like, you know, I don't think I want to be a part of this stupidity. Because politics just got so stupid. I mean, it just got so stupid. And Bush was stupid, but what's happening now is somehow even stupider. So I finally just gave it up and was like, okay, forget politics. I'm going to try comedy now.
Okay.
And so after I left Jones Day, I did an open mic. And my first open mic, I wrote 5 minutes, and I memorized it word for word, and I practiced it in my apartment every day for a week before I went to the open mic. And I specifically wrote something about how I didn't believe in God because I thought it would be politically damaging. And so I had to persuade myself that I was doing this and I didn't care, even if it hurt my political aspirations, or like I had to get over that.
Yeah.
So I did 5 minutes about how my father had died and I didn't believe in God and I was all alone in the world, and a total bomb. There was one dick joke in it. The dick joke got like one old lady in the front row sort of pretended to laugh because she recognized it was supposed to be funny, I think. And that was it.
Okay.
And so I sat down and I was like, well, this is just nobody could get a laugh in this room. And then a comic who's a friend of mine now named Dylan Stevenson got up and did a joke, which was, I think we should give homeless people marshmallows because then they'd just be camping. And the whole room broke up. And I was like, okay, so it's not the room's fault. It's my fault. I need to go write better stuff. And that was my introduction to to stand up.
Right. So now you've been performing for some time, and you've moved back to L.A. from New York.
I have.
Where you can now read outside again. And
yes, the weather is conducive to getting in trouble with the hiring partner again.
Good, good. But now what's interesting is that you've really stepped up your comedy game a notch. You're doing a web series, right? It's called The Lawyers, the Web Series?
Lawyers, the Web Series. LawyersTheWebSeries.com.
Okay.
We try to keep it simple. Lawyers, the Web Series, a web series about lawyers.
Right.
So basically, that's the web series is myself and another Los Angeles lawyer slash comic named Jonathan Goldstein, who is also a newly minted comedian at law.
Right.
And I don't know, we had sort of the same sensibility where we wanted to talk about law and we wanted to talk about politics, and we felt like stand-up wasn't quite giving us the platform that we needed. There was just too much to explain in the stand-up bit. You had to see it, you know, what it looked like and what it felt like and why being a lawyer was such a pain and such a disappointment, really. And so, we decided to do a web series, and we shot it at my office on my iPhone after hours. And, we shot sort of at nights and on the weekends, and occasionally someone from my firm would walk in. We had a partner in my firm walk in while we had a camera pointed at the front door. So that was some explaining, you know.
Right.
But everybody's been cool. The firm I work at is pretty laid back in that sense. And so, we tried to get into student loans, and, we have an episode called Drones, where we try to take on a pro bono client who's a drone pilot. Navy. And so, we think it's going to be like this noble thing, and then he comes in and he's like, no, I just want money. I just want to sue for money.
Right.
So it's, those sorts of things, trying to get into like the money grubbing and how you just can't get over, like, the money kind of brings it down. Everybody goes to law school thinking that they're going to help or make a difference, and it's really just money.
Yeah.
It's either you're making money or you're out.
Which brings us full circle to being in community law, which is obviously all about the money.
This is part of my plan to amass a fortune.
Right.
And then circle back and run for president.
So now you're part of community law. You've got the web series going. Are you performing regularly in LA? Is there someplace people can see you on a regular basis live if they want to see you live?
I don't have a regular spot, really. I've been doing open mics. I've been writing a lot of new stuff, but the web series is kind of my full-time, part-time gig right now.
Okay. Give everybody the web series website again, and we'll get
there. Sure. LawyersTheWebSeries.com, all one word.
Okay. So everyone, if you're listening and you want to see that, please check out that website. And, of course, you can see Adam and his partner, Jonavi, on the Comedians at Law website, where their bios and headshots are up. And if you're interested in seeing the Comedians at Law on the West Coast, you can contact us and you'll see Adam and Jonavi and our good friend Matt Ritter. We're all based in Los Angeles. And if you want to see Adam in the East Coast, you'll have to wait till he comes east to, I guess, visit family or whomever lives here still that you know. Or the Jones Day office, where you come and just have a nostalgic wave.
Yeah, going back to Jones Day now is like going back to college. There's just nobody left there who I know. You know, like, what would I do if I walked in the building? Nobody would know who I am. But yes, hopefully someday I will make it back to New York. It's very funny. I moved out here because I'm engaged to, or I was engaged at the time, and I'm married now to a girl who I met in law school. And she was insistent. She moved with me from LA to New York and then was insistent that we had to move back. And as soon as we got here, she said, I kind of miss New York. So now what we talked about is moving back. So,
well,
we'll see. Who knows where life will take me.
Right. Okay. Well, we got to wrap up. So everybody, again, that was Adam Bloom, one of the newer members of the Comedians at Law. He's got a Lawyers, the Web Series, and you can see him on our website, comedians@law.com. Now we're back to the podcast. Okay, everybody, that was Adam Bloom, and as you can hear, he is a fascinating guy who once had delusions of being president of the United States.
He's a character.
He's a character, indeed. And we've got one final segment before we turn to our Twitter feed. As you know, our new segment every week is our own Kevin Israel. Still can't figure out how to work his computer. So here we have Kevin versus the Internet.
Thanks, Matt and Alex. This is Kevin Israel with another installment of Kevin versus the Internet, where I find a story from the Internet that absolutely enrages me, and I get to go off on it a little bit. This week's is a really good one. I found it on the New York Daily News' website. It seems a Mr. Leon Shepherd of Memphis, Tennessee, decided to will his entire estate, being $250,000 cash in a 4,000-square-foot apartment, to his two cats. Yes, Mr. Shepherd left everything to his two cats. He has 5 kids and 12 grandkids, but he decided that his two cats, Frisco and Jake, should get everything. That's just suspect immediately when a guy has two cats, one of which is named Frisco. What's wrong with this dude? I don't like cats. That's my own personal opinion. I'm sure we've got some cat lovers out there. I don't trust cats. I've never liked cats. I think they're sneaky. It always looks like they're scheming something. But that's neither here nor there. Leaving your estate to your two cats is insanity. Now, we've all, you know, a lot of us have taken wills, trusts, and estates while we were in law school, and we probably had those fact patterns or those hypotheticals, or maybe even some cases where people left money or property to animals, dog, cat, some pet that they loved. And I always thought that these people should be eliminated. It's ridiculous. And I also think that the lawyers who agree to draft these wills that, you know, leave a gift to an animal, especially a substantial gift like $250,000, I think those lawyers should be disbarred. That's insane. No will should ever actually be followed that leaves something like that to an animal. I think that should be an immediate sign that they are not in their right state of mind if they're leaving something to their pets like that. And the reason Mr. Shepherd left everything to his pets was because he wanted those cute cats to remain in the life in which they've become accustomed to. What? What does a cat becomes accustomed to? You know what cats are accustomed to? They're accustomed to scratching posts and tuna and crapping in a litter box and catnip. You know how much catnip $250,000 could buy? I don't know how much exactly, but I bet it's a lot. That's ridiculous. You know what, Mr. Shepherd? You could have left me the 4,000-square-foot apartment. I live in a 1,000-square-foot studio, and you could have left me the money and the apartment, and trust me, little Frisco and Jake would have a very, very happy life in somebody else's apartment. This is ridiculous, and I can't stand this guy. I would like to find Mr. Shepherd before he passed, and I would like to have kicked him in the face, because it just doesn't make any sense to me. It absolutely doesn't make any sense to me. So, listen, if you've got a pet that you love, let me know. Would you leave money or property, or would you mention your pet in a will? If so, tweet at me at KevinIsrael_NJ or at comedians@law, and let me know. And also, if you're a wills, trusts, and estates attorney and you've ever actually had to draft a will with such a bequest to an animal, let us know, because that's crazy, and we'd like to know how you dealt with it and what you thought of it. So anyway, that's it for me. Mr. Shepherd and his estate, I hope Frisco and Jake are living very happily, because God knows they're probably living better than I do. So anyway, back to you, Matt and Alex.
Oh, that Kevin.
Yeah, well, it's good. He's gotten to the point where he now knows how to turn on the computer and open his Outlook. So,
welcome to the 20th century.
That's right. Eventually, you'll catch up to the 21st. All right, Matt. Look, we're gonna do something a little bit different this week. Rather than doing the good cop, bad cop segment, I think, as you pointed out rightly, people have not really been engaging at that level. So we're just gonna turn to our Twitter feed and give shout outs to people for reaching out to us, for following us, retweeting us, and see if anybody's tweeted something interesting that we want to talk about.
I don't even have it up, so you run right through it quickly. Right. I'm thinking about Thanksgiving turkey.
That's right. Well, the good news is we've gotten a lot of new followers just in this past couple of days. We've got 6 followers: Raf G, Harry Setiawan, the Red Shoe Institute, Bolarin.
The Red Shoe Institute. What is that? That sounds sexy.
The Red Shoe Institute. I'm going to tell you in 1 second. The Red Shoe Institute. It's international speakers, authors, leaderships, and management training consultation.
Not what I thought it was. Never mind.
Right. You thought it was going to be something sexy.
Yeah.
Jeremy Rickler and Kyle Schmidt are our new followers. And we also got a nice shout out from Life of Dad and Tommy Riley, or Tommy Riles, excuse me. And Law Mind Maps. And actually, Life of Dad, Tommy Riles are good people. I know them. I know him through my dad's a comedy work. So thank you, Tommy, for mentioning us in a retweet. So the good news is, Matt, we've got a lot of new followers, and we'll have some more after last night's show.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're huge in White Plains now.
We are huge in White Plains. The bad news is, again, for some reason, people are not, you know, they're not tweeting at us. They're not telling us what they want, what they need, what they're looking for. So
yeah, law students, tell us what you want. Do you want us to send you a free like outlines or something? I don't know.
Well, I think what we ought to do is preview for people. We're going to have a lot of new interesting things to offer them come the new year. We're working on an ebook. We're going to be doing some CLE stuff. And if people listening have any ideas about the kind of CLE they'd like to see, or ebooks they'd like to see, or memes they'd like to see from us, because we've been doing a lot of that, please tweet us at Comedians at Law, and we'll send that stuff your way as we get into 2014.
Yeah, let's rock it out.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
That's right. Happy Thanksgiving. So this is episode 61 for the Comedians at Law. I'm Alex Barnett.
And I'm Matt Ritter.
We'll see you guys after the holiday.